You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. That is the noise from what was at times a fantastic away end at the Allianz Arena. A better one still followed, I'm told, at Turf Moor on Saturday night. It looked and sounded a belter. In truth, United were poor in both games and came away with an infuriating 4-3 defeat in Bavaria, but a much needed 1-0 victory at Burnley. On today's episode, it's just me, Harry Robinson, with my regular co-host Jack Tate, away from home for a couple of weeks. You can find his thoughts on Twitter at UTDTate, that's T-I-T as always. But as for today's episode, what we're talking about, well, Bayern first, Bayern Munich, and Munich as a city itself, and a shepherd's hut, which, if you've not been listening, might surprise you a little, but we'll come on to that in a second. Then Burnley, then the Academy's three games recently, the under-18s and under-21s in the league, but also the 19s in the UEFA Youth League at the FC Bayern campus. We'll also talk an upcoming EFL Trophy game against Bolton Wanderers on Tuesday night. We'll talk about loans, we'll talk about the matches against Palace in the Premier League and the League Cup, and a little bit on my book as well. So let's get stuck in. Plenty to do on this slightly shortened episode, because it's just me. I don't want be monologuing at you for too long, but we'll begin with Bayern Munich away. It was a strange start to the day of Bayern Munich against Manchester United. I said, give me a sec. And I looked out of the peculiarly shaped, heart-shaped window that framed a brown-tinted green field out of this little wooden shack. And I looked down to find two rams who were snorting and butting their horns impatiently, attempting to join me in what was called, our Airbnb host told us, the Toiletten House, the kind of outdoors toilet. Yeah, two rams butting in. And for a post-Oktoberfest trip to the toilet the morning after, you require a decent amount of time. So it was a surprise. Oktoberfest was fantastic. We spoke about last week, me and Jack, and how this trip to Munich had its downfalls, namely in how expensive it was going to be for so many Manchester United fans because of Oktoberfest and the combination of factors. But it did then give the opportunity to go to Oktoberfest, which was, it's just a brilliant collection of happy people, aided, of course, by a constant flow of 6.2% beer. But it's also kind of like a rare kind of semi-tourist trap, which genuinely does meet your expectations and lives up to your hopes for it, and you don't feel like you're being consistently fleeced by whoever's organising it, which you can have a lot. But as for the accommodation, it was as a result of those enormous price hikes in travelling and accommodation that we stayed in the Shepherd's Hut. We bulked at the hotel and hostel prices. I think it was about 50 quid a night for a hostel, let alone a hotel. We also turned down the chance to stay in a tent near Oktoberfest, which for one night might have been okay, but for three, with some valuable belongings with us, including our flag and a couple of laptops for working on, didn't seem too sensible. And we were turned down by several Airbnbs, who then increased their prices immediately after. And that led us to our fate in the Shepherd's Hut. It wasn't cheap, but it was certainly cheaper. And yeah, it provided an interesting start to the day, a couple of rams trying to join you in the toilet. But the sheep were generally very friendly. When we stumbled back from Oktoberfest the night before, we were met with these kind of six black faces out of the near pitch black void that surrounded our hut, and a couple of confused bears. Yeah, the sheep were friendly, sleeping beneath our hut, prodding its kind of wooden bottom occasionally as they rearranged themselves throughout the night, waking me up a few times, but quite a nice way to be woken up. And Munich as a whole was fantastic. It's a really kind of a lovely city with amazing food and good drink, obviously, but also kind of big and busy, but with quite a relaxed feel to it. I don't know if that's true at all times of year outside Oktoberfest as well, because obviously that gives it a certain vibe, with both tourists and Bavarians wandering around in their lederhosen. but it felt like a really nice vibe to and obviously for United fans, you've got October 1st, you've got the game at the Allianz, but also an opportunity to go to Manchesterplatz, which is a pilgrimage of sorts for United fans. And it was the first time that I've been somewhere I've always wanted to go to, and I found I think quite a refreshingly unassuming and unpretentious memorial to the victims of the Munich air disaster. And it's particularly nice because you go and you visit and you're surrounded by other United fans, and that's kind of the key to it. It is a fan-led memorial. It's club supported, but that memorial has, over the decades, has really been kept going and maintained by football fans, not just United fans, but Bayern fans as well, purely out of love for the game and for those that died. So yeah, that was really nice to go to. And it was interesting, the kind of that theme of fan culture kept cropping up for this because of the differences and similarities between United's fan groups and support and that of Bayern Munich. There was a great piece written by Matt Ford, who's a mate I see on these European aways for The Guardian this week, which was titled "Bayern Fans Show Manchester United Away for Holding Owners to Account." And it's a good point because Bayern's ultras are organised and influential, and at United it does feel as if the support's kind of core values are becoming less core than ever. We were stood in the away end on the Wednesday night, and a banner reading "No to Qatar" was held up and unfurled in the away end at full time. And there was kind of active dissent from other supporters who went up to the lads holding the banner and said, "Do you want the Glazers to stay then?" And the reply was, "Well, no, that's not what it says. It says no to Qatar. It doesn't say Glazers in." And there can be debate around this, and people can have their own opinions. People are allowed to think what they want to think, but I don't think any fan should prevent their kind of fellow supporters from having a voice and being allowed to express themselves. Debate's good, but the people kind of dissenting against that No to Qatar banner seemed to not be keen for particularly well-engaged debate on it. They were just kind of shouting abuse at the lads who were holding it up. And it's a really interesting one, the differences in fan culture, because Bayern Munich are obviously aided to a great extent and backed up by regulations in German football, whereas United supporters, it's the opposite. They're hamstrung by the lack of regulations in the English game, and also by the fact that kind of the key active kind of political section of United support who would protest against these things left in 2005, 18 years ago, when the Glazers arrived. And that part of the fan base, not all of them, but that part of the fan base, a lot of them went to form FC United and Manchester and stayed there. And other people who have not been involved with United so much in recent years. And that was kind of the truth behind the 2021 match that was called off against Liverpool. It was fans who hadn't been involved for quite some time returning and showing just how influential United support can be when well organised and when working together. As for the match itself, it was, I said to my brother and my mates who I was there with, it felt like some kind of sick joke. And it also felt to me like it represented United's last few weeks, where the bad seemed to follow the good with such grim speed. You can hardly take a moment to enjoy the good bits. Like, United started that game really well, I thought, and it was much like at Arsenal. More like at Arsenal, less like at Spurs. It was great to see United having a certain sense of control on a game away from home against a top opposition. But then you're faced with this good start, and then suddenly a goalkeeping mistake from the player who started the season well, in my opinion, and who I think is a good signing, and not when you're expecting it, you're not expecting it from him, suddenly that. And then United clearly have a mental problem with maintaining focus after conceding. And I think this is something Marcus Rashford said. I can't remember if it was an interview before the Bayern game or after, but he said, "When our game plan's disrupted, we're not good enough at coping with that at the moment." And I think that's abundantly clear. It's good that the players recognise that, but it's abundantly clear and it's something that needs to be sorted out. But you then get the fantastic to get back into the game so soon after half time, and Rasmus Højlund scoring, having had the misfortune of his goal being disallowed by the finest of margins against Brighton. Højlund scoring brilliant, but within a couple of minutes, bang, United are back chasing a 2-goal deficit instead of 1 goal. And it's felt like this season, like a couple of good signings at the start of the window, then bang, the Mason Greenwood palaver. You make another good signing, a fantastic young player, you scrape past against Wolves, then bang, you lose to Tottenham, then Anthony's faced with horrendous allegations that he then has to go and deal with. You play well at Arsenal, but face the tightest of VAR calls that stops you winning the game, and instead you lose it 3-1, and then there's a hissy fit from one of your players who's then suspended, and the manager speaks out against him, he speaks out against the player. There's been all of this, all under the cloud as well, of all of that, the deliberation over the takeover. So it's been such a deflating season for United fans, I think, and this game in particular just felt like some kind of sick joke. And the second goes in to make it 3-2, and then back, United are 4-2 behind. And I thought at the time, and I'm not saying this with hindsight, but I thought after Bayern scored the fourth, we are nailed on to score a third here, just to rub in at how ridiculous a game this has been. So yeah, it was a really strange one, and it took a while to, I think United was so weirdly in that I think United played pretty well in the first half, but went in 2-0 down and played really poorly for most of the second half, but won that half 3-1. It's just, it kind of sums this season up. I don't know what to make of United at the moment. There are some positive things. Hoyland is one of the key ones. We'll come on to a couple of the positives about Burnley as well. Well, from the Burnley game, but there's so much that needs to be sorted. So much that needs to be sorted. And in the aftermath of that game, Tube Journey or the Metro Journey back, you felt pretty bleak about United and about Ten Hag as well, who in that immediate aftermath felt under serious pressure. And the difficulty is, I think this is what we've spoken about, is that last season Ten Hag was held back by a variety of factors, but everything he did seemed to make his life easier. He was asserting his authority. And this season, there's been a few decisions from him that have held himself back rather than United holding him back as well, which is obviously still going on as well. But yeah, I'm really glad got the much needed win at Burnley to take some of that pressure off, and hopefully there'll be a couple of wins against Crystal Palace to really ease things. But yeah, the circumstances he's working under are so difficult, and the injuries at United are ridiculous at the moment. There are positives out of that Bayern game, but in the aftermath it felt very difficult to find them. Hoyland was great. Onana is a concern. I don't think a long-term concern, but you cannot be doing that. He owned up to it post-match, which is good, but you just cannot be doing that on the top stage. As for the Allianz Arena itself, I mentioned in last week's episode how excited I was to see it. What a stadium. One of those that, a bit like the San Siro, it kind of takes your breath away in its size. Even though the capacity is not so much bigger than Old Trafford, for some reason it just feels enormous. And the walk to it, which is a very long one for the away fans who are sent round by the railway track, that it's a long walk, but it's nice to have the view of the Allianz lit up in red. Fantastic stadium, really, really liked it. Okay, little break, and then we'll talk about Burnley. Well, I mean, Burnley, thank you to Johnny Evans, to Bruno Fernandes and Hannibal in particular. I think Evans starting a game for the first time for United since March 2015, as has been much publicised. Unlucky to have a disallowed goal for, I think, probably the right decision, but unlucky nevertheless. And then a fantastic assist for just a brilliant Bruno Fernandes finish. It was so, so good. And a reminder of probably kind of a seasons gone by where United have relied on that piece of individual brilliance from Fernandes to drag them to victory. I think in the circumstances, an ugly win is at Burnley on a Saturday night in an 8 p.m. kickoff is very, very, very much acceptable. United were starting with Johnny Evans, our left back, who's our third choice left back, who was brought in late on because our first two choice left backs were both received injuries, was ill, still started the game because we were in such kind of strife and did well, Reguilón. So much going on in terms of injuries, and that back four said it all of Evans, Reguilón, Lindelof and Dalot. Your second choice right back, your third choice left back and fourth or maybe sixth choice centre backs. Plus, you still can't start Amrabat, but it was good to see him make his debut. And your two right wingers who are both suspended or out of not available for selection for very contrasting reasons. Plus another intervention by VAR, which was, even if correct, was harsh in terms of the momentum sapping impact it had on United when it could have really got us going. So I don't think there's too many big conclusions to be taken out of the Burnley game, except it was absolutely a much needed victory. And I'm very relieved for Erik ten Hag, and I imagine he is very relieved as well. So Hannibal is worth mentioning. His second start for United, having scored against Brighton in kind of a pointless goal, but not pointless to him, meant a lot to him. We spoke about that. But for him to play 90 minutes in that game and make real contributions, particularly at the end, showed some real maturity to win free kicks and kind of take the energy out of the game when Burnley were looking for the equaliser. And I thought it was a more mature performance from Hannibal than I've seen. The Brighton game, that Hannibal didn't surprise me at all. A moment of quality with the goal and kind of hurrying around and harrying Brighton players and getting himself into little scraps here and there. There wasn't really any of that, but against Burnley, this was more about his quality and his composure instead of just that aggression. And there was still that aggression to it and some great tackles and energy to his game. But I was much more impressed with this performance, even though he didn't score a brilliant goal in it. We'll talk about the academy. Yeah, we'll talk about the academy now.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
So, in terms of a quick briefing, the under-19s beaten 2-0 by Bayern Munich in the UEFA Youth League on Wednesday afternoon. The goals for Bayern from Robert Ramsack and Michael Scott, one in each half for them. United kind of caught playing out from the back a couple of times. That's been the case at several levels over the last 2 years. It's probably an expected defeat away to Bayern in the first game of the Youth League group stages. Bayern have a really good team and some fantastic players. They've not always performed in the Youth League in recent seasons, but they've always had really good players and they played well in this game. United came close to scoring a couple of times. Ethan Wheatley, who was born in 2006, was probably the standout player. Shay Lacy played as well, but was quite quiet, which is kind of expected, I think, given his age and his physique. Whereas Ethan Wheatley, who's kind of similarly young, but his physicality, he's not built, but he's tall and lanky. He's got long legs. And that helps him impress at a higher level. It's not why he looks good though, and that's a good point. His footwork and his balance and his pace were all impressive against Bayern. And if he got on the ball a bit more, United probably might have fared a bit better. The under-18s captain, Finlay McAllister, scored an injury time winner in a 3-2 win at Sunderland. He then travelled down to Burnley to watch the first team's win at Turf Moor on Saturday. He's a regular at home and away matches. I've seen him plenty of times. Sorry about Barca away. But yeah, plenty of other places, but that's kind of a teenager's dream, isn't it? Captaining United and scoring an injury time winner and then going to watch the first team away from home and win in the away end. It's pretty dreamy stuff. Under-21s fell to a 4-0 deficit at Carrington against Arsenal in a disappointing half-hour spell in the first half of their Premier League 2 game. United scored one just before half-time and Amari Forson scored another for the Reds in the second half. Forson also hit the post twice during the game, once in each half. But the key difference is United's second half was good. The first half, or that half-hour spell, was really poor. The difference was that when Arsenal dominated the game, they ripped through United. Whereas when United dominated, they created a few chances, but not with the same ruthlessness at all. And Travis Binion said he was proud of the team over the 90 minutes, but really disappointed for that 30-minute spell. The good news from that game was that Reece Bennett and Sam Murray, both defenders, Reece Bennett, centre-back, who scored in the FA Youth Cup final and captained the team a couple of years ago. Sam Murray, who was also part of that FA Youth Cup team, they both returned from long-term injury layoffs. Reece Bennett was going to be involved with the first team in pre-season but got injured, so it's great to see him back, and they both worked very hard for that. Also, in Academy News, there was a kind of an Academy delegation sent to the Manchesterplatz, to the Munich Memorial. And it's kind of a reminder, I know how much the Academy do around Munich. It's the work they do is brilliant. The education team And I often wonder whether the significance of Munich is truly appreciated in all parts of United, but working there as a writer and reporter, I have seen that in most departments it is genuinely seen as kind of the most significant date in the calendar. For example, like the programme team, United Review, always have one eye on how it can cover Munich differently, who it can pay tribute to this year that doesn't receive enough credit, or who it can remember that is sometimes forgotten. And as part of that, a couple of years ago, I focused on what the academy do, and learning about Munich is probably the core part of the education academy players receive at United and staff as well. It's always made abundantly clear that the academy's following in the footsteps of the 58 team and of the coaches around that time, and of Jimmy Murphy and late Eric Harrison and so on. And I think there's also an awareness that the academy was the bedrock of the club in the aftermath of the crash and how important that is. So I spent some time on one of the days where the under 13s in particular are the team that learn about Munich. They do a few months on it. They produce posters, write poems about it and all of that. And Jimmy Murphy Jr., son of the legendary assistant manager, Jimmy Murphy, the man who kept the red flag flying, is the motto or the phrase. Jimmy Murphy Jr. will go in and speak to the young academy players about it. And it's, I think what's lovely is to see genuinely how interested they are and how engaged they are, because you can always think about kind of young footballers like, oh, but why would they care about this? But like, I remember seeing one when Jimmy Murphy Jr. was introduced as like Jimmy Murphy's son. Not everyone remembered who Jimmy Murphy was, but one of the kids like jaws dropped and was like, whoa. And I just thought it's really nice that, that still happens, and it shows kind of the significance of having that physical connection to the past, which is going to be increasingly a struggle as the people who remember the Munich air disaster sadly die out. But the projects the academy do around Munich is fantastic. In low news, Alvaro Fernandez came off the bench in a 1-0 defeat for Granada against Las Palmas. Charlie McNeil played 57 minutes for Stevenage in a win against Cheltenham, and Will Fish played another 90 minutes for Hibernian, earning a clean sheet in victory over St Johnstone. Coming up this week, United play Bolton Wanderers in the AFL Trophy on Tuesday night in a 7:45 PM kickoff. That match clashes with the first team's game against Crystal Palace in the League Cup, which is a real shame. I know there'll be a lot of United fans who are actually skipping the first team game to go into the away end at Bolton, which is where United were knocked out of the competition last season in the round of 16. It will be a really tough one. That Bolton beat United 4-0 last season and are a very good team again, near the top of League One. They've got some strength in reserve, which is probably where they'll be playing. They won't put a full strength team out, but they're a properly good team, and United will struggle here, I think. If they can play at their best, they might give Bolton a bit of a game, but I think they'll struggle. As for the league at the weekend, the 18s play Newcastle United at Carrington, that game on MUTV, but the under 21s game not on MUTV. That's Saturday, 12 PM at Blackburn Rovers. Now, Crystal Palace, two games coming up. Interesting point that James Nolan and Dan Gore were both involved with first team training on Monday. A little bit on James Nolan, that since won the academy. He played really well in the EFL Trophy game at Stockport, I thought. I don't think he'll be involved against Crystal Palace. I don't think he's ready for it, but I think he's making up the numbers because he's a fullback, and so with Reguilón ill, he's probably there to make up the numbers, but a great experience for him. Dan Gore, someone we're more likely to see. Hopefully Hannibal will start as well, and Garnacho, having missed a couple of games, will probably start in this one as well. So United need to win this game. They are defending champions of the League Cup, and it's just important for momentum. Of course it is. Crystal Palace have got a lot of injuries as well as United, so I think we'll see two very kind of reserve teams in the League Cup game, and the best teams that both clubs can put out in the Premier League game. Two wins would just be so valuable, and I think I'm confident that United can get them, with Mason Mount back, with Varane back, not necessarily starting in the Tuesday game, but hopefully the Saturday, with Amrabat now available to pick from, with Højlund playing well. I think that Højlund-Rashford partnership is warming up. It needs work, and I think they're very aware of that. It was good to see Rashford talking about how the fact that they're doing work together, even without the coaching staff, knowing they're just trying to learn each other's games, and that's needed. Not all striking partnerships can just immediately click. Very few do, though there have been some, like Colin York, which apparently did just click immediately. So I think those two will do really well together. It's clear that Rashford's getting used to playing with a proper striker like Højlund. But yeah, I'm really excited about Højlund at the moment. I think he's started really well. Final thing, apart from to say I hope United win against Crystal Palace and both games, is a small update on the book, on my book, The Men Who Made Manchester United, that I've mentioned a couple of times on here. Thank you to everyone who's shared the book so far, and an even greater thanks to those who have pre-ordered it. It makes my day whenever I see anyone's kind of giving it a chance, because it's any kind of financial outlay is much appreciated. To have your work kind of be bought by people is, it's a strange but really nice feeling. But a small update, the book's release date has been pushed back 3 weeks due to shipping issues caused by the recent disasters in Libya and Morocco, which is, as I wrote in the weekly newsletter I do now, it's a timely reminder for anyone working in football to follow the advice of a well-known writer and to remember that very few things in sport are actually a disaster or a tragedy, which is worth remembering at Manchester United at the moment. But yeah, to those who have pre-ordered the book, sorry, but you'll have to wait a little bit longer. It's a little bit frustrating, but it gives me a little bit more time to prepare for his launch, which is good. So that's all for the Manchester United Weekly Podcast this week. Thank you for listening. I hope it's been enjoyable, despite it being just me and not Jack as well. I will be back next week, probably with a few clips from Jack and possibly with a guest as well. This one was a little bit short notice, as I only got back from Munich fairly recently and have been fairly work busy. But yeah, I hope you've enjoyed it, and go into either of the games against Crystal Palace. Enjoy them if you're watching from your sofas or in bars all around the world. I hope you enjoy it as well. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. As always, have a great week. Goodbye.
Podcast Network.